Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today, but
yes,
mostly I think we're going to wind up focusing on a new film that I don't know that we ever talked about if both of us were seeing. I just texted you the other day and said, hey, are you going to go see Weapons? Because we had seen Steph and I had seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to know what the deal is. And she was like, the closer it got, she was like, I really want to know what happened with those kids. Let's go see that movie. So we're going to talk about Weapons, but we both watched like a hodgepodge of different other things. And
yeah,
neither one of us, well, you finished Eyes of Wakanda, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I did.
We'll start there because I only watched the first episode and you said I probably watched the second best episode.
Yeah, like, okay, so here's the thing. I don't know what I was expecting from it because, okay, so like first and foremost, it's beautifully animated. It's really, like,
The episode I saw, I was like impressed. If you go back to the first season of What If,
yeah,
it's like this Marvel animation is not like we watched the beginning of this year. We watched the Spider-Man show, whatever.
Yeah, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah, and that was such a jump in quality, even from the previous season of What If, which had just aired in December. Like, and this is like the one episode I saw was better than that. Like, this is really good.
No, it is. It is like they continue to find the thing that I find most impressive is their collaborations with different animation studios and production houses. Like, they're trying to find the right partners, right? And they're on the right track. Like, this is beautifully animated. It's got that shaded cell, a traditional animated kind of feeling to it. And it also has it's very strongly a Disney style. You could tell that they were leaning into the Disney style, which isn't a bad thing. Like, that's a classic look, right? It's just, I don't know what I was expecting. Like, they did a lot of, the best episode, I don't know if you've seen the rundown on them, but it's Legends and Lies.
Okay.
Which is it's not ruined, but Legends and Lies is the second episode, and that's that's about the Trojan War. And how a member of the wolf pack, I guess they're called, or the dogs of war, which are the war dogs, not the what are they called? They're like the equivalent of the CIA to the Secret Service what's the guard? What are the guards of Wakanda? Dola Milaje? Dola Milaje. Yeah, the Dora Milaje. That's what it is. They're like the CIA to them, the war dogs. And I guess it's the whole thing of, like, I wasn't looking for something that's almost a little dour, which it is. Like, it kind of, like, does this really pensive thing in all the episodes of, like, oh, well, this is the cost of like Wakanda keeping its secrets. And is it good? Is it a good thing to keep its secrets? And I'm like thinking to myself, in this fucking era, yes, it fucking is. You fucking absolutely keep that tech away, because it's not just like the most, there's like a difference between the best and the most fun. The most fun has a character in it You probably saw the person in the title sequence. You just didn't put the thing together. It's another. I won't ruin it because you haven't seen it just yet. But in the third episode is the funnest because it crosses over with another character and it takes place. These all take place in the past, right? And then in the fourth one, they kind of connect it all with the future. It's okay, but I think that I was expecting something a little bit more poppy. Do you know what I mean? Like something that's not as pensive. Like I said, Legends and Lies, it takes place during the Trojan War. It literally has the war dog like teaming up. It's like a team up between him and Achilles, and it rewrites the whole Trojan War, the Odyssey before like no, like what I loved about it was like, well, before Nolan's movie, a year before Nolan's movie, Ryan Coogler and his group just kind of like, okay, let's kind of make this in the style of Hercules, because they very much so make the characters look like the Hercules characters, you know, with the noses and stuff like that. And I know that sounds off color, but I mean, like, you know, if you watch Hercules, they kind of make it very much like these Greek, like these Greek archetypes, right? And they very much so do that in Legends and Lies, and it's a lot of fun. And then it gets to the point to where, you know, what happens to Achilles happens to Achilles, and it's like, oh, okay. And then it becomes this whole pensive thing, and like that's the episode's tone. Like at the end of the first one that you watched, Into the Lion's Den, about the lion and everything, it doesn't end with a rah-rah. It ends with a oh, right? Like, it's like, oh, I'm going to be pensive about this. Like I don't know. I spent time outside, and it's kind of great. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, these guys got it twisted because Wakanda is great. Like, that's like the whole part. Like, I feel like Black Panther, like the two movies so far, what I feel like they have like kind of tried to push is that Wakanda is great. Like Wakanda is like the best of us, not just the best of like it, the best of the world, right? And in this one, it kind of makes it go, well, we still got stuff like the CIA. We're gonna keep our secrets, but we're gonna do it the nastiest way possible. We just don't want you to know. And it's, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, give me this, like, I know it's 10 years on, which is wild to say that we're almost 10 years away from the original Black Panther. But this is the third property that we've had. I don't count Ironheart, because it's, like, even though it's produced by Coogler, and she's kind of adjacent.
It is a very, like, it doesn't have much to do with, like, to the point that, like, at some point in that show, it's like, why doesn't she just call Shuri? I don't understand it.
Yeah, exactly. Why? Like, that's what I kept on thinking about the entire show. And now it's kind of made it lesser, because I was like, at the end when she gets kicked out of MIT, why didn't she just call Shuri and go to fucking Wakanda? Fuck you. Fuck the U.S. Go to Wakanda, where the best of the best is. And you're supposed to be the best of the best, right? What were your thoughts of the initial episode? Because that kind of sets the tone. It really does.
I really enjoyed the episode. Like, yeah. I thought it added something to the Wakandan, like, mythos. I do like the idea of exploring this. Like, it is kind of a utopic society. Yeah. Even though, like, even in the movies, we've seen that, like, from the outside, you might not view it that way because of what happened with Namor and his people, and like the fact that Killmonger. I mean, it's kind of like the Doctor Doom thing. Like, yeah. That's what makes a good villain, is that like there's a part of them that's right.
Yes.
Like, they go too far with it. They do have, like, evil tendencies, but the base of what they're talking about is right. And Killmonger was right. You know, he's like, you know, you stood by, this whole society stood by while people came over here in ships and enslaved people, and you did nothing. And yeah. you have continued to do nothing. Like, you have the technology to help so many people, and your answer is to do nothing. But the flip side of that is, by keeping to themselves, they've created this utopic society, more or less. I mean, there is kind of war between, there's animosity inside the society, but it is very just like, you're right, it's like the best of the best. Like, we have all the best technology, we have it's great, and you just have to try to find, like, they're creating their own drama internally.
And exactly.
So the idea that, like, that happened without them being altruistic, I think it's really, it explores something. Now, whether they get too deep on that, I guess time will tell. But I don't know. I kind of like it. I'm interested to see the, because it's only four episodes, right? I'm definitely interested to see the other three.
Yes.
I loved the action beats in the first episode. I thought that was very, very well done. And I mean, God, this sounds, it sounds however it sounds, but like, there's not a lot of, like, hey, here's a woman, it's an African woman, like, mm-hmm. running around beating the shit out of people, being the best of the best. You know, yeah. There's just not that. And if nothing else, the Black Panther stuff gives us that, you know? Well,
exactly. And also, like this show, like, that action is like a taste of what you get in the next three episodes. And it's on the cusp of being R-rated. Like, there's, like,
There were some kills in, I was like, the hatchet through the head, and then they show it. I was like, oh, damn. Like, yeah. That's rough.
Yes. So there's two things that, like, really stuck out to me, and it kind of colored the first one really colored the entire series for me, and you will see what I mean when you watch the next three episodes. It's a very specific thing, and it's very obvious, because it's like, why the fuck did you do that? Oh, yeah, because this is America. You'll see what I mean when I say that. But then the second one is a little bit more interesting, which is, it's how the series ends. It's the final shot they decide to use, which is a live-action shot from the first Black Panther that goes into an animated cell. And they say, like, it's interesting what the dialogue is they say when they look at it, and I think it's a setup for Black Panther 3, and it's going to be a very interesting discussion, especially because I feel like, if people sleep on this, they're not going to really understand, like, that, like, it's going to be the entry point for Black Panther 3, because, again, this is all the creatives involved in this animated series were involved with Black Panther. Like Coogler, like, from everything that I've read after I saw that final shot, he came in like the way that he did with Ironheart and really shaped it knocked it into shape. Like, this was like one of his babies and were stories that he specifically wanted to tell. So that also kind of it half shades my critique of it, because then I go back and it's like what you said, it's the Doctor Doom of it all. But it also, like, the final shot makes me go, huh, I think that we're going to be right about a couple of things in this Black Panther 3 that we're getting. But anywho, I'm definitely interested in what you have to say about the next three. We'll follow up on it once you are able to actually
probably get to them Sunday. So,
okay.
So while we're on the animated front, I guess we can talk a little bit about the return, the long-awaited return of yes. one of our favorite animated shows of all time, King of the Hill.
Yes. Okay, so did you, okay, so like I do have to ask, did you watch the whole, did you binge the whole thing or?
I have not. I've been slow rolling it.
Okay, so. Good. Yeah, that's the way that like we watched the first two episodes and then we're like, okay, let's sit on this for a little bit. So what are your, like how many episodes did you watch?
There's, were there 12 total, 10 total, something like that?
There's 10.
Okay. So I've watched 4 of them.
Okay. So you're only 2 ahead of me. Okay. So like, what is your overall thoughts after you've watched these 4 episodes or even the 2 episodes?
The losing Johnny Hardwick cost this show.
It really did.
The Dale stuff's already written. I get what, but it's one of those things where it's like, if that happens before they go into pre-production, I feel like you can get away with, like, until you find something that's absolutely someone that's perfect for it. Because I think the fill-in, he's doing a good job. I forget his name. He's been a voiceover actor for King of the Hill forever. He's doing a good job, but it's just, it's not Dale, you know?
No, it's not.
I you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, Dale was an accidental, like, insurrectionist on January 6th, and that's why he's not in the show. Like, that's the kind of thing you could get away with King of the Hill.
Yes.
And have him not be there until you figure something out. Instead, you know, what was there is already there. I think it's, other than that, I think it's great. I think it's absolutely perfect seeing Hank deal with modern day. Like, it's weird because King of the Hill is modern. Like, I know it started in the 90s, but like it ran for a while and there was a lot of, like, that show ran up until what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, it was I think it was the last series was 2010. Like, the last episodes we saw were May of 2010, so literally 15 years ago were the last ones.
The things that have changed in 15 years. It's astounding to me, like watching them tackle things that they never would have had to tackle, like that they just didn't, that didn't exist back in even 2010. Like, it's insane. I love it though. I think it's great. I think the Bobby stuff is just beautiful. Watching him like be his own person.
Yeah, like that to me is like the core of the show. Okay, so like some, like going back to like the whole Johnny Hardwick of it all, man, Judge's voice, I cannot believe how much it's changed in 15 years, because Hank literally sounds like Butthead aged up. like his Hank has changed just a little bit enough to where it sounds like it literally sounds like Butthead older. Like when he does the older Butthead, like I didn't make the connection, and then I had to go back and watch an episode of the most recent Beavis and Butthead where he aged him up. Like there are a couple of episodes where they play that like they're in their 30s and shit, and it's really funny. But oh my god, and his Boomhauer just sounds very different. Like, other than that, like it's kind of amazing how they managed to make, in the two episodes that I saw, to get their footing. And like the beer story, like Return of the King is very kind of, it's a little jaunty. And I had wished they kept certain things and dropped other things, but Beer Story really kind of like sets
it's
the.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's that so sets, good.
Yeah, just sets the table. Like my favorite part of that is Boomhauer's kid, adopted kid, when he does the beer thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I literally laughed my ass off when he passed out, like when he like hit the full can and he passed out. Jesus. But that story, everything about that episode kind of like set the table and reset everything to make it so that, you know, like it felt like, okay, this is King of the Hill 2.0. Like that, like this feels like what we should be getting out of like modern era, like King of the Hill. Now, question for you. Did you feel like, like the first episode kind of did a disservice for a couple of people, including Hank and Peggy, with the whole Saudi Arabia? Like, Saudi Arabia looked too good. Like, I don't know if you, like, I kind of wanted to go back. If I was Hank and Peggy, I'd be like, let's go back. We don't have anything here.
It's funny because did you ever watch American Dad?
Yes, I watched. I watched it for like about 4 seasons and then I just stopped.
Yeah, because his whole shtick kind of runs thin after a while. Yeah. But there's an arc in American Dad where he goes to the Middle East, and it's so much the world that he wants to live in.
Yeah.
That he's just like, why does everybody hate this? This is great. like King of the Hill doing something similar is a little, but I do like that. The thing about it was that the people he was working for in Saudi Arabia created such a prototypical what you saw in the like 50s and 60s American town. That's where Hank loved. Like, he didn't really like Saudi Arabia. He liked this absolutely fake town that he lived in.
Well, did you notice that their house was the Simpsons house?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the funniest joke in the first episode. Also, like, okay, like I like you, and you are 100% right. It's like 50s era. Like, both of them love it. Like, it's not just Hank, but it's also Peggy loves everything about it too. Like, and I continue to love that they carried over the joke that she does not know how to speak a word of any other language that she knows.
Saudi Arabia. Like, it is so freaking, and then you've only watched two episodes, but
yeah,
there was a semi-continual theme of like Peggy has now become, I don't want to say an alcoholic, but definitely kind of a drunk.
Oh my God, that's so great.
not so much in the fourth episode, but the first three episodes, I swear to God, every time you see Peggy, she's about to start drinking. Has already been drinking and is kind of buzzed, or is past the point. It happens in the beer episode, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I mean, she just buzzed the whole episode. So, it's pretty funny. Just Peggy doesn't know what to do with, much like Hank doesn't know what to do with retirement, but she's doing it. Like, by just day drinking and watching shitty reality television.
Oh my God, that's so great. That is so, like, there's just a lot of like good things that are in it. Now, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about. Okay, so I kind of wanted like, and you knew you could tell the difference between like the pilot and then there had been time away from, and they decided to get rid of it, which was Bill being a fat shut-in was hilarious to me, and I wanted them to continue it on, but then they literally
quickly move away from that. Like, from it, next episode, he is back to the old Bill.
And I'm like, no, don't do that. I do love the animation math of like Bobby being 21, even though there's been 15 years, and he's not 6 years, like he's not a 6-year-old in the last episode. But I do love that he's become both Peggy and Hank. Yeah. But also Japanese German fusion. Are you fucking kidding me, dude?
It is such a it's funny. But it's also, it's funny in multiple ways. I mean, that's Mike Judge. Like, he's trying to hit multiple targets. And, like, it's making fun of, like, the whole fusion restaurant culture. But also that he's successful at it. You know, and
yeah,
yes, Japanese, like it's a World War II joke, because it's also exactly. A nod to Cotton, every time he talks about it, blows my mind. So it's a big thing in the next two episodes. The restaurant is a big, like, point.
Okay.
In those episodes. So nice. Specifically the third episode. So you'll like that.
Okay. And also, like, I love the fact that his only employee, like, so, like, they talk about
his Japanese. He only have one other employee.
Yeah, but he speaks Spanish. Like, he's they speak Spanish to each other. And he speaks fluent Spanish. And like these are the touches that I love that, like, tell you how much Mike Judge understands the world. Like, he really, like, it's not that he's critiquing these people, even though he knows that, like people like Dale if anything are is idiots. Pointing out
the constant hypocrisy. Like, yes. That there's ultimately, like, good in most people, even somebody like Dale. Like, yeah. Deep down, they're good people, they're misguided, and that we're all really hypocritical when it comes down to it. I mean, this isn't really a spoiler for the third episode. I'm excited for you to watch that one. But it is all, like, not all about, but it gets into, like, cultural appropriation. And this white kid running a German-Japanese fusion restaurant when he's neither Japanese nor of German.
German, yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of, like, it doesn't really tackle it, but it gets into it, and you kind of just start to see the, like, yeah, like, some people do take that appropriation stuff, like, too far and are actually culturally appropriating things, and then sometimes we just get our dander up over something. We should just be like, that's weird, and move the fuck on.
Yeah, seriously. But it's great. Like, the two episodes, like, it made, like, it literally, there are a couple of things that literally made me laugh out loud. And, like, watching shit in your house, if something makes you laugh out loud, you know it's fucking funny. Like Dale and his son with the cops are on to us. And they fucking run away, made me hysterically howl. And then they just go over to the cop beer, like, which is just, like, fitting to them. Like, you know, like, or the trash bag, like, where they're both looking at, like, at the judges. Like, it's exactly what you expect. It did make, like, whenever I saw John Redcorn, it did make me super sad.
Oh, that was such a bummer. I mean, God, that might have been the, like, bigger than Dale, that might have been the thing that I was just like, oh, it's just so sad. It's sad for so many reasons, you know.
Yeah.
We don't have to get into it, but, like, A, that he died, that he was murdered, that what happened, and that his life was, like, such a, like, chaotic mess because of drugs and alcohol, and it's just, yeah, super, super sad. And they were always more or less, like, generous to him. King of the Hill was. It's kind of, I think that we probably won't see much more of John Redcorn. I do appreciate that they continue the Joseph still doesn't understand that he's not Dale's son, and also that he's not white, like,
which is great. Like, that's still the I think that there's so much, like, I feel like there's so much, especially in 2025,
that can be talked about in this particular on this particular kind of avenue. So I'm actually really looking forward to seeing like what they do, what he does with it. I really am.
Yeah.
Like with a lot of things in this show. You know, it's also amazing to me that Pam Alden can still do Bobby's voice, and it's like pitch perfect. It's a little aged up, but it's pitch perfect. Yeah. Like, you know,
like she hasn't missed a step. But it's weird because Peggy and Hank do sound a little different. Boomhauer does sound different. Of course, Dale sounds different. I don't think Bill does so much. Like when they go back to regular Bill, he kind of just sounds the same. But that's Stephen Root. I mean, Stephen Root's been doing this so long.
Yeah.
For her to be able to do Bobby and it sounds like a grown-up version of Bobby, like it is really, really impressive.
It really is.
I'm kind of hoping as the show goes, it does become, I mean, it was always about all the characters. It wasn't always just about Hank, but I am enjoying the like intro into Bobby's new life and new world. Cause like, he doesn't even live in Arlen anymore. He lives in Dallas, or outside of Dallas. And I really, really enjoy that. The fourth episode is mostly, well, it's about 50-50 between Bobby and Hank, but it has a lot of Bobby away from his parents, you know, kind of thing. I'm loving it. I'm glad we know we have one more season.
Yes.
Coming next year. I don't know if they picked it up beyond that, but I do think dropping them all at once is not a good idea.
No,
it needs not at to be all. A weekly show. I wish they had a deal with a network. I know network television isn't really a thing, but I don't know. This should be on Fox on Sunday night. You know what I mean?
Like get rid of one of the 75 different Seth MacFarlane things that they have on or whatever. Though I know that in the fall it's going to get killed by Sunday Night Football. But maybe release it in the spring when there's nothing left. I mean, it's bad timing. I know that they're just filling gaps and they don't care. But there should be a little bit of care with this kind of stuff, especially as good as the writing is.
Maybe with the Hulu and Disney folding into just one app.
Yeah.
Which was the news we got this week. In 2026, Hulu will basically cease to exist as a separate app. That will make it a little bit like bigger, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And to be quite honest, like, you know, people that are bemoaning that, Europe has had that for years now. Like as soon as Disney Plus opened, their version, like, because of the fact that they didn't have a Hulu out there, they had rented out their Fox properties to various other streamers. They started accumulating Fox like properties and stuff, and all bringing back their Fox properties onto the Disney banner. So this is not going to be anything new. This is a new thing for us, but this is something that they've done for a long time. Which, to be perfectly honest, one less streaming fucking service.
It's fine with me. Even if the price of Disney Plus goes up by $1, I'm paying for Hulu and Disney Plus. So okay, that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with it. Hopefully it can get I don't know what the audience. I know a lot of people I know were excited and have been watching it, but we travel in that circle of like, yeah, King of the Hill was great. So
yeah.
I was pissed when they canceled that for Bob's Burgers. Then became a massive Bob's Burgers fan.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, oh, this proves that we can have both of these shows because they are, for me, like the best animated programs that we've ever had. Like, I love Futurama, but it became Roller Coaster. Like, there are bad episodes of Bob's Burgers and King of the Hill, or episodes I don't love, But I there's nothing in there that I'm like, ugh. But maybe one episode of King of the Hill, the ant episode early on in King of the Hill is don't love that. That's a little too ridiculous for that show. But outside of that, like, I don't know. I could just always watch King of the Hill, man. I can always watch Bob's Burgers. They have become like The Office for me. But even The Office has episodes I can't watch. So
yeah. Oh, speaking of The Office, let's do a side tangent here because I'm very curious because you are the biggest Office fan I know. They just released the trailer for The Paper. Your thoughts?
I didn't watch the trailer.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
I'm going to watch the show. I figured I'll just avoid the trailer. The show drops in less than a month, like the end of this month or something.
September. September is on Peacock.
So about a month away.
Yeah. Do you want to know? Like, I think you should be prepared because it's not it. Oh man, I really want to tell you about the tone, but I'm also like maybe not because I might go
back and watch the trailer. So
because
I didn't actively avoid it. I was just like, oh, the trailer's out, and I just didn't watch it. So
okay, it's definitely interesting because I was not sure what to expect from it. Because I will say this. It does not feel like Greg Daniels. It feels like somebody else's show. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not going to tell you whose show it feels like, but when you watch it, you go, oh, I know exactly what Adam is talking about. Because it doesn't, like, you know, like Greg Daniels has a very specific tone to his shows. Yeah. There's a snark to it. Like, The Office has a snark to it. Like, it has a snark to its characters. And I'm not saying it's not a heavy snark. It's a light snark, right? Like, it's this cutting edge that always keeps you on your feet because there's always going to be something there that kind of, like, undercuts the sweet with the sour. And it doesn't necessarily feel like that. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Like, especially with the trailer, because the trailer is a very kind of Tony kind of thing. And, So anywho, I'll be very interested I'm very interested in seeing it. After I saw the trailer, I was, okay, I'm in. I'm very much so in. I'm very in on this one.
Well, I know Mo Welch was like a big creative force in the show. So, and I really appreciate like her work, like with Conan and like all that stuff. So I mean, like I said, I was already there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I don't know, if I see the trailer, great. I'm sure it'll play in front of, since we're talking about Peacock, it'll play in front of, our favorite, video game, like,
Twisted Metal. Yes, it is.
I don't know if I'm two episodes behind. I haven't watched this week's drop because they're dropping them in chunks. So
yeah, which doesn't bode well to me. I have not started the show. It's
fucking great, man.
It's so good.
I don't know if they, like, I only watched three episodes. I don't know if they have enough material to go past this season because this is all about the tournament. Like, the whole.
Oh, okay.
First three episodes that they drop are they're introducing. They introduce, what was his name? Axel or something. The dude that, like, was in the thing, like his arms were the wheels.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. I know what you mean.
From the game, like they introduce him. They're quickly introducing more like characters, quote unquote, from the game and building to this tournament because our favorite sociopath, I don't know, whatever.
Sweet Tooth.
Well, him, but also I don't know if we talked about him being in this season. What's his name? Who played Metamorpho in Superman? From Barry.
He
is the big bad in this season.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. He's wearing this like really shitty wig and everything. It's pretty great. So he is putting this tournament together and invited all the best racers from across the country to come compete in this tournament for the chance to win their heart's desire. You know, it's ridiculous, but it's a video game show. So yeah, it's, it moves pretty fast to introduce a lot of new characters, to reunite our two leads. And I don't know, like, it's moving pretty fast. I'm excited to watch this week's episodes. I just haven't, there's been so much to watch. I just haven't got to it. So,
yeah, no. And I've been working. So like, I have not been able to actually watch, catch up on the season.
It's really good. I'll be interested to see if they can do another season, but if they don't, like, we're going to get the tournament, we're getting some wild ass shit, and it's a lot of fun. So,
okay. I mean, and it's Anthony Carrigan. That's the guy that plays Metamorpho. NoHo Hank. I just know him as NoHo Hank. I mean, he's just so great in Barry. Fucking Barry. I think, let me see here. And he plays Calypso. That's who he plays. Calypso.
Yeah. Calypso. Yeah.
Yeah. Who was the host in Twisted Metal? Like, if you played the game, he does look like NoHo Hank in the game. And he was like the host of the Twisted Metal game whenever you played it. So that's kind of cool. That's very cool, actually, that they brought him into the world, the Twisted Metal world, which, like, you know, judging by the rating, it's like you, me, and seven other people are fucking like the only people, and Paul Rennick and Rhett Reiss, the guys who wrote and created the show, are like the only people that really remember this game, even though there was like seven different like Twisted Metals, if I'm not mistaken, all on PlayStation 1. Like, they all came out within a 5-year span. I'm very much looking forward to watching this. Like, we're getting to the point now where, like, it'd been lean for a bit with like the content, but now, like, Wednesday is back, and I know my wife wants to watch that.
I was going to ask you if y'all watched Wednesday.
No, we haven't watched it just yet.
So I was not the biggest fan of season one. At this point, I don't know that I actually finished season one. I thought I did, but I watched the first episode of season two, and I'm like, I don't remember any of this, like, how season one ended stuff. But I do know that I wasn't the biggest fan.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the season opener of Wednesday.
Well, you know, the cast is what got me to come back, because they literally have half the cast from the original one.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi shows up pretty early on.
Christopher Lloyd?
Christopher Lloyd, not in the first episode, but he is coming. I saw the teaser for him.
Yeah, like I was.
There's just like, a Jesus. Lot more Gomez and Morticia in the first episode than there was in all of last all season.
Because all it was like... I'm just not a big fan of her. Like, I'm just not a big fan of her. Like, I think we talked about this on Death of a Unicorn. I'm not a big fan of her. She's literally Gen Y's answer to Aubrey Plaza. We already have an Aubrey Plaza, and she's great, and she's amazing. And yeah, it feels like everything that she does is like Aubrey Plaza adjacent. I don't know. But my wife is very excited. I'm excited for the cast. Like you said, the cast is what's going to get me there.
First episode's pretty good. Like, okay. it sets up a central mystery. It gives us more players. So she's not so much the focus in the first episode. So
okay,
we'll see how it goes from there. So
okay. Does it feel like a Burton show finally?
Not really. I mean,
man,
it feels way more like, because however you say his name, and Miller. It's the Smallville guys.
Goa Miller, yeah.
It feels more like them. Like, it's got the Burton aesthetic, but it's not as Burton focused. Like,
it doesn't feel like Beetlejuice.
And maybe for good reason, like, they are noted television producers, you know, they have produced plenty of shows, specifically Smallville, that have done extremely well. They know how to operate in television. They know what it takes to do, even though I do like that Netflix is splitting this up into like 4 week chunks.
Yeah, you
know, we got a batch of four, and then I think in a month you get another batch of four. If you're not doing week to week, I do kind of like that. So it's not, you just binge it and then forget about it. But yeah, maybe for good reason, because that, like I said, they know how to work within television, and Burton is a little uncertain there. Plus, I mean, he's probably has hands full doing God knows what. So, I think it is him that brings the names in, though, for sure.
Oh, like, yeah, people absolutely can do
this show because he's part of it, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I'm so mad right now, like, just a side tangent, I'm so fucking mad because you know how, like, they're having those Dolby Vision screenings of Batman 89 and Batman Returns?
Yeah.
My screens for it are local, but it shows at 8 o'clock at night and 10 o'clock at night. So I wouldn't get out until like midnight on a Monday night. Are you kidding me? I'd be asleep. I'll be asleep. I'm asleep by 9 o'clock. I couldn't fucking, I'm like, why aren't you showing like this earlier? And the one that I really want to watch, which is Batman Returns, is only one showing. It's a 10 o'clock at night showing. And I looked everywhere, and everywhere it's not, it's like, there's a 4 o'clock showing for Batman. The closest that you get for the original Batman 89 is like a 3 o'clock showing. And I'd have to travel like 40 miles for that. And I'm not going to do that, right? Like, I might as well go see the 4 o'clock show. But it's not a double feature. Like, they're not showing them back to back. Like, it's annoying to me because it's like something that I'm getting excited about because it's not one of those Fathom events where, like, you don't know whether the transfer is going to be good or not. It's actually a genuine, like, they're a DLP 4K with the Dolby Vision, it's all specifically done as an actual digital package, right? And there's only like three showings and it's one day. Whereas like I can go see like eight showings, like, and I probably will see one of them, of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in a couple of weeks.
We're going to that. So that and Jaws. Because Jaws is playing at the real IMAX.
Nice. Yeah.
We're setting aside whatever time we have to set aside to go do both of those, and pay, because AMC Plus won't cover TMNT. So we're just going to pay to go see it, because I haven't seen it in theaters, of course, since I was a child. It's been a while since I watched the movie. I think 2 or 3 years, but I fucking love that movie. I was bummed that I'm not going to get to see Batman. But even a shot at a showing, I would have to drive about 2 hours, and oof, I'm just not going to do that. So
yeah,
it'd be great to see it in theaters again. I have it on Blu-ray. I can watch it if I want to watch it. So
I have it on 4K, and the 4K is the best looking that shitty looking movie has ever looked.
Can you tell that Gotham City is complete cardboard when you watch it in 4K?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's painted. It's like put together with scotch tape. Like, you literally can see the seams. Like,
like, you could tell that the budget, like, it's so funny to watch Batman Returns and see the budget skyrocket because it goes from,
there's
like
more than seven people that live in Gotham in Batman Returns.
Exactly.
The mayor or the chief of police or whoever it is, the district attorney, has a press conference on the steps of City Hall, and there are nine people there.
Yep.
It is literally insane. Like, you could not get more extras. Walk outside the studio and just be like, hey, who wants to come be Batman? Come shoot this.
So like, my favorite part is, so Batman cost a total of $50 million to make, right? And it, like, I always thought that was big budget, and I never understood why it looked so cheap. But then I started to realize that budget included above the line and below the line talent, and $30 million of that, $20 million to Jack Nicholson alone, and another $10 million to the various cast members that they got, was eaten up by that budget. So they only had $20 million to make that movie. So, of course, it was made with cardboard and paint and just crapulence. I've seen Italian genre knockoff films look better than that. That were made for $1.95. It blows
my mind that people hold that up. I'm not knocking the movie. It's fun. No. It's fun. I love Batman 89. But that people hold that up as the pinnacle of Batman in the cinema still. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, man. Like, The Dark Knight has something to say about that. And so does The Batman. But also, it's not, other than like, oh, it takes Batman seriously, it's not too many steps beyond the production value of the Batman 66 film.
Exactly.
There's just no rubber shark in this movie, you know?
No, there's really not. And there's actually more entertaining villains other than like coked out. Like, the whole thing is that the Joker in Batman 89 is literally just Jack Nicholson on coke.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is. Like, that's not really, it's not really a Joker. It's him interpreting Cesar Romero, but on cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, sure. And I will make a hot take of this. Like, I'm going to say this here because I've seen the movie enough. I'm going to say the Batman is the penultimate, is probably the ultimate Batman on screen for me, because
I need to go back and rewatch it.
You can have your Dark Knight. You really can. But I will tell you this much. Dark Knight is not a detective story. The Batman is an actual fucking detective story with him doing shit that no other Batman has done that translates from comic book to screen. Like, being in a room full of cops. Like, when have you ever, like, oh man, like, I, like the more and I watch it, the more I fucking love what Reeves does. Give him the time.
Supposedly they have script.
Well, they do have the script, and like, the rumor, did you hear the other rumor is there's a Robin in it?
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
He's a little young. This Batman's a little young to have a Robin, I would think. So,
he's 39. Pattinson will be 39 by the time he starts filming.
He still looks like a kid to me.
I know, he still does. I mean, he is.
46. I think of him as being like a good 20 years younger than me.
I know, it's those goddamn Twilight movies, man, where he looked like, even though he was like close to 30, I mean, that motherfucker was like 25 when he was making those movies, but he looked like he was 10 years old. It's funny because, like, I hated that dude for the longest time, and now I love him. I'm the biggest fan of Pattinson. Like, as soon as he got out, he did what I think, like, he is like the guy, like, I often talk about this with friends, is that he is what the equivalent to what my dad thought of Brad Pitt early in his career.
Yeah. And like, I hate this stupid kid.
Yeah. But then he aged into, like, he kept on doing like really good roles, and my dad just couldn't deny Pitt. And then now he's like one of his favorite actors. Like, you know, like one, like, did you see the F1 movie? Yeah, Dad, I saw it. Well, I'm going to go see that movie. I'm like, yeah, the F1 movie. And it's literally, like, I keep on forgetting. It's literally called the F1 movie. or it's called F1 the movie. Like, F1's they literally, movie,
yeah.
Yeah, they literally named it for dads. Like, it's like, it could be called Dad the Movie, and you'd know what we're talking about. But anywho, yeah, like, that's my hard take on the Batman, is that it is the best Batman movie. Like, you can take your Dark Knight, Gen Xers, you can take your Dark Knight, and you can go and do whatever you want with it, because that's not real Batman. That's Christopher Nolan doing Michael Mann's Heat with the Joker inside of it. That's my take. Because if you think about it, Batman Begins is a little bit more of it, but it also Batman Begins feels more like Nolan doing Blade Runner, but with an adventure story inside of it. Like, it's so not a Batman movie, right? Like, because he spends so much time doing the adventure stuff with learning how to be Batman. It's not really like, and then he takes, like, I don't know why nobody ever looked at the fact that he took Burton's Smilex storyline and literally just transitioned it. I mean, I know it's Scarecrow, but literally didn't see, oh, well, Smilex and the gas are the kind of the same thing. Maybe I shouldn't do that. But he did.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
God bless you, Harley Quinn. It's the best thing we got out of those fucking is that voice, is that baby voice.
All right, so I want to hit you with a few things that, because it's been a little while, because we talked Fantastic Four and whatnot. Yes. I'll also, just not to relitigate the whole Fantastic Four thing, but I was thinking about it. We seemed really negative on that movie, and I just want to reiterate that I had fun watching that movie.
Oh yeah, no,
it just wasn't as good as we hoped it would be.
Yes, exactly. No, I mean, okay, so like, let me say this again. Like, I said this at the end. We did too. Like, you did too. It was a good film. Like, there are sections of it that are actually great. I had a hell of a lot of fun with it. I will watch it again. I'll probably watch it more than a few times because it has a lot to do with Doomsday. So I'm not a part of this whole crew of, like, I'm getting sick of this whole, like, let's go ahead and get news hits for, let's before they were doing it with DC, and now they're doing it, like, they continue to do it with Marvel, where it's like, oh, well, I guess I guess this is the end of the Marvel cycle.
It's ridiculous. I wish it did better, but, like, also, it's a pretty crowded summer, man. Like, a lot of stuff kind of, you know, ate into Fantastic Four's second week box office. But, since we talked Fantastic Four, I've watched a few things that we've kind of sort of texted about, but I wanted to just get in. Mm-hmm. I don't think I told you, I did finally watch Nobody.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I love it. I'm excited for the second film even more so now. Like, I did not. Fortunately, I didn't see the Christopher Lloyd trailer.
Oh, so I didn't
know he was in this. So when he shows up and we get the whole, like, family thing going, like, I really, really love that. I'm excited for the second one. Me and Steph both, like, we watched the first one. She was like, I am so excited to see the second movie now. I was like, yeah, me too. It's pretty fun. The Naked Gun.
I have not seen it yet, which I'm going to see it this weekend.
We'll talk about it when you see it, but just like, as much as I want Fantastic Four to succeed, mm-hmm. it's still the Marvel machine, and I mean, it's going to take a lot of failure on a level we haven't seen to stop the Marvel machine. The Avengers movies will have to fail. Comedy on the big screen has been flailing for decades now.
Yeah. And
we collectively as a society need the Naked Gun to be considered a success. It's fucking good. It's really funny. Really funny.
It's the movie, like, this week, I'm making it a point of seeing that, and then also seeing, like, and talking about supporting comedy is going to see Freakier Friday.
We want to go see that. We may go see that Sunday. I haven't seen the first one, but I kind of feel like I know what the premise is.
Bro, it's on Disney Plus. Watch it tonight. It's a quick breezy 90 minutes.
Tonight, I'm going to see Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that's right. You're going to see the Bacon Brothers. That's right. I forgot about that.
One other movie I want to hit you with, like, very briefly. Mm-hmm. We saw The Bad Guys 2. Ezra. We went and saw The Bad Guys 2. If you like The Bad Guys 1, you will like The Bad Guys 2. I do think it's a better movie than the first.
Oh, really?
Movie.
Okay. Yes. I really enjoyed the hell out of The Bad Guys. Like, that was one of those pandemic movies that came out on Peacock, like, literally a month after it showed in the theaters. And it was one of those movies where I was like, damn, I really like this animation. I really like the, I really like how big it is. I really wish I could have saw it on the big screen. So yeah. I like that. I mean, and it's doing well. It's not, and the whole thing is the Naked Gun isn't doing terrible. It's just not doing bango box office numbers.
Yeah, I mean, we collectively as a society, we kind of need this movie to make like $300 million because then they would be like, oh shit, people will go see comedies. Instead, we're getting stuff dumped on Prime and Netflix, and I mean, there's a new Eddie Murphy
movie.
I want to see it. It looks fun.
Well, they said that it's the pickup is actually fairly good. Like I was reading reviews of it, and people are like it was like they were shocked because like earlier this summer or like last month earlier in the month no actually last month because it was July, the whole like we watched Heads of State, which was not a terrible movie, but it wasn't a great movie. It was just a fun these are the things that would have actually shown up in August in the theaters Amazon is fucking picking up because they don't want it, because MGM is a studio, and it's like, just fucking throw it out there. Jesus Christ. It has Eddie Murphy, Pete Davidson, Kiki Palmer, and Eva Longoria. Are you fucking kidding me? And it also has guys like Marshawn Lynch. What's his name? Roman Reigns. I want to see a movie.
There's another movie that I can't fucking see because it's on AMC Plus. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for it. I cannot think of the name of it. What's his name? Jack Quaid in it. I'm trying to get it pulled up.
I don't know. There's another one with. Oh, is it Neighborhood Watch?
Yes, that one.
Yeah, with fucking with baseball bat boy, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. what people like my friends and I used to call, because The Losers was like a big movie for us. It's like I still love that movie. We used to call him
The Losers. Is great, man.
It really is. But we used to call The Losers because it was such a big movie for all of us. We used to call Jeffrey Dean Morgan low rent George Clooney. Because he's like doing George Clooney in that fucking movie. Like, he literally wants to be George Clooney so bad in that movie. Which he does a great, like, I fucking love The Losers, man. Like, that whole vibe in that movie. I mean, it has fucking Idris Elba before Idris Elba was Idris Elba. And Chris Evans back when he was doing his douchebag thing. I love the fact that no matter what, except for when he's playing Captain America, Chris Evans can't hide the fact that he's like supremo douchebag.
Dude, how that movie was not a success, like the cast alone. I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Zoe Saldana, Chris Evans, Idris Elba, Jason Patrick was in it. Like
playing one of the best bad guys.
Yeah, it was fucking great, man. And it just was blipping the box office. Anyway, Neighborhood Watch, I also want to see. I can't because I don't have AMC Plus because fuck them. but you know, it's whatever. Maybe I'll find a way to watch it. But yeah, companies are getting just dumped, you know?
Yeah, they are. Actually, Roku has it.
Oh, do they? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it has, it's like with commercials, but I mean, like, I don't own Roku Premium. I have like the Roku non-premium with ads. They
just launched a commercial free. I don't know if people know, because it didn't get a lot of fanfare, but it's $2 a month. It's commercial free television. I don't know what all's on there, but I forget what it's called.
I actually got an advertisement for it, or I got a press release for it. I don't know. Like I have all of the ones like Roku, Tubi. Let's see.
Howdy. That's what
Howdy.
It's called.
Yeah, it's Howdy. Yeah. I was like looking inside my email inbox, but yeah, like it's on it. Like, so you can watch Neighborhood Watch. That was one that I have earmarked because, I'm gonna say this, all in on
Jack Quaid. I still haven't gotten around to watching that, his little action comedy that came out a few months ago.
Like, so. You're a fan of Amber Mid Thunder, like. Like, yes. I don't know why you haven't watched Novocaine yet. Like, Novocaine is a delight, dude. It is a delightful movie. And you know who else is in it? Which I didn't realize. Who's a guy that this year I started to watch, which was Ray Nicholson, Jack Nicholson's son. He did a movie this year that I am super, super hyped. I loved. God damn it. What was the movie? It's with what's her name? Who also has a movie coming out now. Eeny Meeny. Oh, good Lord. It's called Borderline. It's with Samara Weaving. There's another actress. I love Samara Weaving. And, you know, Ready or Not Part 2 is like, I just like her and everything she does. Like, she's just a great actress. But this movie called Borderline, it's on Peacock. It stars Ray Nicholson and Samara Weaving. And it's about a stalker. But it's the darkest, darkest black comedy. Like, it is the darkest comedy. And Ray Nicholson is so fucking good in it. Like,
I have to check that out.
He has hints of his dad, but completely different. Like, and
as much as we shit on the whole Nepo baby thing, it's just like, yeah, but then like Jack Quaid's really good, man.
Yeah.
What's his name in Thunderbolts and Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Like, oh, Lewis Pullman.
Yeah. He's like, Lewis Pullman and, Wyatt Russell. They're both really good, man. Like, it's like, yeah, sometimes these Nepo kids, that like, there's something there. They got the talent from their parents. So
no, absolutely.
I love that Jack Quaid is having like this mini year. Like, I didn't see the companion or whatever it's called.
Oh, dude.
I know he's in that. And I've heard good things, and like, I want to see that. And then he had, you know, his big action movie that came out this year. And then now he showed up in Heads of State for 5 minutes. It was hysterical. And now he's got this movie on AMC Plus and Roku, and then the final season of The Boys. I don't think it comes out to either late this year or first of next year, but you know, that's coming.
They said end of first quarter 2026. So like March.
Oh, okay. God, man.
Yeah.
The post-production on that must be insane.
Well, that's what they were saying was that they initially, like, they, I think they talked to Kripke about it, and it's finished. It finished production.
Yeah.
It's just, they talked to him about it, and they were like, when do you guys think, if he's like, earliest is end of first quarter 2026, probably more than likely, more like summer of 2026, because what we have in store for you, because it's the finale, is so big, and we want to take the time to give you what you guys deserve. So yeah. I can only imagine that it's going to be like Avengers level, like what the Boys would be, Avenger style carnage. And and I'm also just kind of not prepared for another Boys season for another. Yeah. Like, give me some time.
Like, that shit's like an exercise in panic.
Yeah, we're living in that world right now. So, yeah give me a little more time. So yeah, it's been I've watched a lot in the last week and a half or so. But yeah. Absolutely nothing more fucking interesting, confusing, and just all around fascinating than Weapons.
Yeah, written, directed, and produced by Zach Cregger, who made Barbarian, which we should say I'm not going to say much about because I've seen it, but Logan has not. It's on Hulu right now. I would suggest for people, if you want a taste for what you're going to get in Weapons and you don't know anything about, like you just saw, like all of us, you saw the perfect trailer, because I feel like that trailer does a service, not a disservice, to this movie. Yeah,
I want to talk about the trailer. I do want to talk about that trailer. It pulled me in. Like every time we saw it, we'd be like, "What the hell, man? Like, it, what is it? What is it?" And here's the thing about the trailer: that kid's doing the voiceover.
Yep.
And like, they say every kid in this classroom disappeared, and then they very rightly leave part of that out, because in yes. the movie it's every kid but this one kid.
I mean, and we will get into Austin Abrams, who is like, fuck, he is so fucking good in this movie. Like that kid, or no, it's not Austin Abrams. Oh God, what is the kid's name? Cary Christopher. His name is Cary Christopher. Alex Lilly is the character's name. We'll get into him in a moment. But you are right. Like, they left certain things out of the trailer, and it was a good thing. Like, it was purposeful omissions. Well, because
if you leave that in the trailer, then, yes, the trailer's still just as intriguing, but you're sitting there going like, oh, okay, well, it has something to do with this one kid. Like, and your mind just starts working at the... It's the, like, there's no survivors. And so, like, you're still trying to solve the mystery, but it's just like,
yeah,
how the fuck are they going to figure this out? Like, what is this? Like, what is... what happens to 17 kids or however many kids it is? Yeah, I thought it was really, really smart to leave that one little sentence out of the trailer. Because... Yep. When you get that in the movie, immediately I was just like, what the fuck is happening in that kid's house? Like, before we ever see anything, I'm like, well, it's definitely got something to do with that kid. Like, he still showed up at school, but something happened.
Yes. No, absolutely. And, like, there's a lot of this movie that, like, plays in plain sight. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. Like, there's so much of this movie that plays in plain sight, but it does so effectively that I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, this is we've had a wonderful year for horror, and this, along with The Monkey and
I would say horror comedy too, because
yeah.
But here's the other thing, and I know we're kind of talking around the movie, but I don't even know where the fuck to start with this movie. I've read like one very brief review before we went to see it, and it was basically just like two sentences about how Weapons is top tier horror, but it's also extremely fun, very funny, and I was just like, what is this? Like, there's nothing in that trailer that makes me think this movie is fun or funny.
Yeah.
Everything in the trailer makes me think I'm going to be holding onto my seat and gritting my teeth for 2 hours. And part of, like, it was like a good 90 minutes of me like gripping my chair and like, you know, gritting my teeth. But there's a lot of shit in this movie that there is maybe 3 or 4 minutes that rivals the Naked Gun for comedy. And
yes,
not to jump straight to the end, but like those children chasing her, it's so fucking funny.
It is funny. It is like, it's the pressure valve of release that you were like this movie. Okay. So Zach Kreger got $10 million to write, produce, and direct this movie. This movie was like the hottest property right after Barbarian was released. And I didn't know why. I absolutely know why. Because this script is constructed. Like, that's the thing that I latched onto, was that this is constructed in a way that only, like, that I feel, like, he said Magnolia was a huge reference point, but I feel like more like old school Quentin Tarantino, like, the original script for True Romance and Pulp Fiction feel like more of a, like an entry point for this.
Yeah,
like,
I can see all of that. The way it plays with the narrative and introducing characters, and then, like, you follow that character up into a certain point, then you go to another character, follow it to another point where they intersect, and then, like, it's masterful. I will say this, like, because it's funny, it's going to be the reverse of Fantastic Four. I'm going to be talking very positively about this movie, and it's going to seem like I think this is 5-star. I don't. I think it's 3 stars out of 5 for me. Ultimately, I think it's an unsatisfying film at the end. And so that's why it's not a huge success for me. But, like the reverse of Fantastic Four, like, I think that movie, overall, I had a good time with, and ultimately it was unfulfilling, unfortunately. This is the same way, but I had such a, like, I was so into this fucking movie that, like, I felt more jazzed about it than I did walking out of Fantastic Four, because, I don't know, there's just a lot of stuff in the movie that just sticks with you.
No, absolutely. It really does. Like, I'm different than you. Like, ultimately, it connected to me, and it left me satisfied in a way that a lot of movies haven't this year. It's top tier for me. It's, like, literally, like, it's a 5-star movie. I'm on board for whatever, like, between this and Barbarian, I am very much so wanting to know.
I want to follow this guy's career. I think he makes, I think he made a phenomenal, like, this is a great, like, entry into, like, this kind of weird, bizarro kind of horror thing. The guy that operates in this realm that also has had a lot of attention lately is, Ari Aster. Who, like, I've only seen one of his movies, and that turned me off of actually watching his movies because I was so disturbed by it.
Yeah. I feel like him, like, Zagger, like, Kreger and Perkins, Osgood, or Oz Perkins, like, really feel like they are the new of horror.
Yeah.
Like, in the best way possible. I'm
excited for his new movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Which I saw the trailer for. It looks creepy as hell.
With your girl
in it. Tatiana Maslany, yeah.
Maslany, yep. So.
But this, it's so just, I don't know. Like, the supernatural stuff that you get to at the end is a little, like, that's where, to me, where the movie, I know it's going, we all know it was going somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Like, it, because 17, 18, however many kids don't just up and disappear and there's not some weird thing that happened, especially the way it happened. That's such a left turn, but, like, it, you need that in the movie, but everything else, it was like, what's the Denis Villeneuve movie with about the missing kid?
Prisoners.
Yeah, It was like that, man. It was like, oh my God, like what the fuck is happening?
I oh man, that's a movie that I do not like. I thought that I was done with Villeneuve after Prisoners because it was such a dissatisfying movie to me. The stupid whistle at the end. Oh, good Lord. But this one for me is a little bit different because I think for me, I wasn't like, ultimately, I don't know where things fall for everybody in how things are going to fall for people. But for me, like the general vibe of it really feels like there are people that try to do like European flavor horror that cannot pull it off. And then there's people that absolutely can do it. And they leave you with without a big question answered. And I feel like this is a movie where it's going to divide people. Like the execution is not going to be the problem. It's going to be,
it's flawlessly executed.
Yeah. Like in a way that I'm going to go back with my wife cause she didn't get to see it. I'm going to go back with my wife specifically because I want to see how that, like, it's a structure that is so beautifully defined that you kind of want to watch it again just to see the wheels work and how it actually sets that all up. Because the way that it's structured is it gives you some of the story and then it's overlapping with characters rather than story. It promotes the characters before that and it gives you... It does the whole Pulp Fiction thing where it goes back in time sometimes and it goes forward in time sometimes, but it's always covering ground and giving you answers to things. But ultimately, the main question it never answers. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with the ending the way that it ends because it ultimately, for me, go ahead.
Since we're talking about the end, I think it's unsatisfying to me because in my head it's like, and the movie tells you like people won't talk about it because where the fuck do you go from here? Like, how do you resolve any of this? Like, if this is real life and this happened, how as a society, as a group of people, just even a small town, how do you resolve this in your head? Like, how do you wake up or how do you go to bed at night and be like, well, there was a witch lady here who took control of a bunch of children. But like, you know, the flip side of that is that we're also kind of like, as a society, like seeing people almost be mind controlled into believing shit that it's like, what? So maybe I'm wrong there, but yeah, I couldn't wrap my head around that's the end. Like it just ends with her death and them going like, yeah, the town doesn't really talk about it, but if you ask questions, somebody might tell you what really happened. And, you know, for something that was so flawlessly executed, it's like you didn't know how to end it. But the flip side of that is also, I don't know how this would end any other way than like, that's the end. Like, that's the end of this story. Like, some of the kids started talking again and, you know.
Because that's exactly the way. On. Yeah, because that's exactly the way that it would fucking go down. Like, to me, that's the reason why it's perfect is that it gives you everything you need except for that big question, right? And ultimately, that's kind of like, in a weird nutshell, this is 2025, right? Like, this is where this is where we go as a society here. Like, it is very, like, that first, like, section of it, and Josh Brolin's character, like, okay, so, like, weird kind of side note, you know that supposedly... Pedro, like this movie had to get recast at the last minute.
So it's such an interesting like crossroads with Fantastic Four because Julia Garner is in this movie as the main character, but she is the Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Fantastic Four, like the schedule, because of COVID, like COVID and the strikes, and then all it, like everything screwed everything up. And like, am I wrong? Fantastic Four got pushed to the point that Pedro was committed to Fantastic Four, could no longer be in this movie because of scheduling conflicts. And so they had to recast.
Yep.
That was it? Oh, okay. I thought
No, absolutely. And, but like, there's a part of me that feels like they did this movie a service by not having him in it.
I think so. Like, I love Pedro Pascal. First of all, this movie does not open after Fantastic Four if Pedro Pascal is still in this movie. Yeah. Of course, it probably shoots sooner, or you know, whatever. But there's no way it opens like this, because like people would just be like, "This is too much Pedro Pascal." I mean, people are already there, but
yeah.
I love him. I don't know that this. I don't know. I don't see him in this role. I think Brolin is fucking perfect. Like,
bro, like, yeah,
there's almost not enough of him in this movie.
I feel like it was, because I felt like you needed that opening of him, and then you needed to take a step back. You needed to take a step back because you needed him to, you needed it to be like the brewing of, oh man, this guy's a fucking asshole. Like, this guy is like 2025 fucking the dude, right? And then it's only like going backwards do you kind of get that understanding and that empathy for him. Like, this movie is very interesting because it works as an empathy machine, like where you kind of like get these like these moments with these characters where you're like, why the fuck are they doing this? This is fucking wild. But then when you go back and get their story, you understand a little bit more about them. But it's like Brolin is like the perfect guy to play this role. Like, the moment where, I don't know whether it was rewritten or not. I would love to know how much was written for Brolin and how much was written for Pascal, or like what happened, because the moment where he sits there in his dream and like, it's heartbreaking. Like, when he sits there and he's looking at his son and he keeps on, he's going around, and then he says like, I'm not going to ruin it, guys, because this is a movie that I know that you guys have probably not seen and you want to see this. But when he says what he says, the weirdest part about this was that I kept on thinking, there's no way that Pedro Pascal could play that part.
Yeah, I love Pedro Pascal. I'm with you. I don't think he can do those moments justice. And also, like, you know, it's weird, but like, this does have something to say about, like, if you put the pieces together, so you get his story, right? And then you get the kid's story. Like, that's our final little, like, we get it all from Alex's point of view. We get his story, and the son that he's looking for is the bully.
Bully. Yep.
Like, and this whole thing of, like, the conversations he can't have with his son probably have ultimately led to this kid being a little shit to everybody else in the classroom. And like, there's a lot there that the movie doesn't explore, because that's not really what it's about. But like, it leads you to that. Like, you can see like what that is, you know, how as a society, that they're failing these children.
Yes. No, very much. It's a very rich tapestry of like pointed, like, storytelling. And like you are right. Like, it doesn't read. It doesn't, like, what I love about the movie is that it doesn't spell anything out.
And I feel like I'm going to start, like, this is a movie that I'm going to come back to multiple times and find very rich things there. Because here's the thing, is that, like, the thing that I love the most about this movie is that it tells you in plain red fucking letters, which.
Yep.
But you automatically reject it.
From the jump. Like,
from the jump.
It's 10 minutes into the movie and somebody's painted witch on the side of her car. And you get to oh, it's a witch. And you're like, oh, shit. it was a witch. You told me that at the beginning of the movie.
But she never says she's a witch. They never say she's a witch. They never tell you that because they've already fucking told you. They told you in red, bold letters. And, like, my thing is that what I love about that is that is beautifully smart filmmaking. Because
it's just smart storytelling. You're not hand-holding the audience. You're trusting them to go with you on this journey. If they don't understand it, then they don't understand it. Like, that. So we saw this in a theater that was a little bit less than half full. It was a good size audience for a 5 p.m. showing on a Friday.
Yeah.
Or 5:30 or whatever. At the end, as soon as the credits started rolling, two people got up, walked as quickly out the exit as they possibly could. I've never seen people leave the theater so fucking fast.
Really?
I don't know if it had anything to do with the movie or not. I can only assume. But, like, I do not think that they enjoyed this.
I can see. Okay, look. I can see a situation where most, like, there. This is going to be a divisive film. Like, for people that love it are going to love it. The people that don't, it'll be a very specific type of person. I won't point a finger, but this definitely feels like a critique. Yes, but this also feels like a very big critique of, like, okay, so, like, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. This is a very politically coded film because like the way that they treat the Julia Gardner character is very, very, very coded, right? And we know the kind of person she is. But then when the shit hits the fan and things don't go their way, the way that they think it is, it becomes a very different film. And it's like, ultimately, when the ending happens the way that it does, it's like everybody is shocked that these kids are doing what they're doing. But the audience is not shocked because of everything that has happened. And it's like, I don't know, there's like a lot of layers here in regards to this film that I'm like, wow. Like the whole thing with Alden Ehrenreich's character, who is amazing in this film.
Yeah, he like, dude, as of late, like he's had a good couple of months, has proven why A, Solo should have been more successful than it was, and B, that, like, literally people have been sleeping on this dude and his talent. Like, he's so fucking good. What a wonderful side tangent to go on with this movie. I mean, it does tie back into the overall plot, but, like, if you wanted to lose 30 minutes out of this movie, you could just cut most of that out. But it is such a wonderful little adventure, and kind of like weirdly gets into like police work and police brutality and like, it's not justifying anything, but like, also if I was like, do you have anything sharp that I'm going to possibly injure myself with if I check your pockets, and you're like, no. And then I fucking stab myself with a needle. Yeah. I might clock you in the back of the head, man.
Yep. Like, might knock you the fuck out. Might so knock like, you the fuck out.
You know, it's like, well, I'm ACAB, but also, yeah. Like, and then the junkie, his whole story is, I mean, it's funny and sad, but it's funny.
Yeah, so, it's really fucking funny. It's really fucking funny.
When he's looting the house?
Oh my fucking God, dude. When he's when he's in his tent and and we all think the same thing and we're like, but then as soon as he grabs the needles, you know exactly what's going to fucking happen. And oh my God, yeah. Like, oh, it's just like the junkie with his story, the poor bastard of a junkie. But also like, dude, come on. Come on. Like when he's on the phone with his brother or his sister, like we already know.
It's like, I got the job, but I need the money to go get the clothes to get the job. I know that person. I know them. I'm related to that person. Like I've heard those stories. But like you break into a house that you think is abandoned, right? Like, cause there's newspaper up and I get it.
Yeah. Okay.
You break into the house, but then you see these two people who are very clearly alive, but like basically living corpses just standing there. And you're just like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep looting that. Get the fuck out, man. Like, what are you doing?
Absolutely. Like, what? What are you doing? And like, it's a fucking wild. And then when Amy Madigan shows up, it took me forever to realize who
the hell it was. Yes.
But her first appearance as that jump scare, I was like, holy shit, fuck you. Fucking clowns are fucking terrifying. Fuck you. Not realizing it wasn't a clown. But then you also realize she's in the beginning of the film with the father.
Yeah.
Like, that's her behind the back shot. You didn't realize it. Like, you're like, holy shit. Again, hiding shit in plain sight. Like, plain sight. And like that to me is the most harrowing part. The part that got under my skin was this fucking kid and what he had to go through. And that is truly where this movie, like Alex's story is the part that makes me feel like this, like if I watch this another couple more times, this might move up the ladder for me because that is terrifying. Like, this little kid having to do what he has to do, like, and being, like the layers of bullshit that happened to him with his aunt, but also with all of the other things that he's responsible for, is fucking crazy fucking horrifying. Like, just crazy horrifying. Like, in a way that I wasn't expecting. Like, you know, like you expect things to happen in horror movies, but like whenever a film can get under my skin, like really, truly under my, like what I like to say is under my nails. Like if you can separate the nail from the skin in the figurative sense for me, that's where a horror movie becomes like, oh, like, and this movie does that. And like Amy Madigan, like how she got, like how did, like that's another thing. She's not even I went and looked at all of the press release stuff. I looked at all of nothing.
You sign on to this with them with the director telling you like, hey, you're not going to be doing like the only people who might do press for this movie are Julia Garner and what's his name, but like Brolin, maybe the kid, Brolin. You're not gonna be doing press because you don't know she's in the fucking movie until you're an hour into this movie.
Yep. But also like, okay, so like I'm gonna throw something out there that if they don't push her for an Academy Award nomination, there's something going on here. Like, if this movie's a hit, which all intents and purposes, it looks like it's going to make about $20 to $30 million opening weekend. And like, if it makes anywhere close to $100 million, they owe it to her because she is so fucking good to go for that nomination. Now, how you go, like, and now
afterwards, of course, you can start the whole process, right? Like after, because this is a movie that'll be, I guarantee you, even if it's a hit, it'll be on video on demand by Halloween, because the word will have gotten out. It'll be one of those things where they'll want to make extra money. Like, can we just also take a sidestep and talk about Warner Brothers New Line and how they, like, they had the shittiest year last year. And this just goes to prove that nobody knows anything. This year, they are having a banner year with the DC stuff, with horror and genre. Like, they have, like, they now have two of the biggest, like, I feel like two of the best horror films of 2025 in Sinners, which was a massive hit for them, and now Weapons. Like, and they had F1, a surprise summer hit, that's coming back into theaters. But man, Amy Madigan, Jesus, man, she was so good.
Yeah. I mean, doing so much with, like, so little screen time and just, like, yeah, pulling the rug out from under everybody. Everything she's in, it's like funny and creepy and just, yeah, everything. That we talked very briefly about the kid, and I'm with you, like, his performance is great, but I just want to throw in, like, and if anybody doesn't know, like, this won't be the last we see of this kid, because not only is he going to be in Spider-Man Noir, the Amazon Prime series, don't know what role he's playing. He's just listed as part of the cast. But I think Gunn, somebody came out and was like, oh yeah, he's in Lanterns. Like, he's playing a character in Lanterns. So,
okay.
So yeah, we're going to see, plenty of this kid. He's playing a character named Noah Macon in Lanterns. Huh. Doesn't ring a bell comic book wise.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But that could be a fake name. Like, we often happens.
He could be like young Hal Jordan or something. Like, maybe he's, you know, who knows? Anyway, he's, you know, getting plenty of work. So, that's exciting because he is really, really good. A lot of people get some really good moments in this movie. I don't think there's any moment as good in this movie as him. Like, you watching this kid figure out how to stop all of this.
Oh, man. So good. So good.
And, like, it's just, it's because the movie's not telling you what he's doing. You just get to, like, go along with him, and you're like, oh shit, like, he's watched her do this. So he knows, like, hopefully he knows how to do this. And he is, like, very worried, like, am I going to get this right? And, you know, like, breaking that stick. And then it's so fucking good. So, it might be a 3.5 out of 5 for me. Like, maybe I sounded a little negative on it. I don't love the, like, hands up, like, who's the dude, the TikTok dude that like, you know, just puts his hands up, that guy. Yeah. So yeah, it felt like that kind of ending for me. But overall, it's just fucking, it's absolutely fascinating, extremely scary, like, very nerve wracking. I want to ask you about your, like, specific to your screening, because I don't know if either I was watching it in a theater that wasn't completely up to snuff, or if that's the way the movie was filmed. It was extremely dark. Like, the dark stuff, I could not tell. Like, when they were down in the basement, like, unless he was shining a light on the kids, I could barely see them.
Okay, so so it was dark, but here's a fun thing that happened to me in my screening, which was, my screening, they had the floodlights on for the first 10 minutes.
Oh, that sucks.
And so we literally were about to riot when they finally turned it off, and then finally somebody complained and they rewound the film and replayed it. They had to literally replay because the floodlights were on. So we couldn't see anything. Yeah,
you can't see shit.
Yeah, so, like we literally could not see anything.
When the lights come up and the movie's still going, and it's just like, it's not like at home where it's like, well, I can kind of see it. You can't see anything.
No, you absolutely cannot. Like, it was like, yeah. So, needless to say, like, I'm going to say this, which was, no. Absolutely not. Could not see anything. It was a very dark film. So, yeah, I couldn't see anything. Which, I mean, okay, fine. Like, you know, like...
That's my point. If that's the choice, then I'm okay with it. I was curious, like, did I see a bad screening? Or was this the choice to be like, no, I'm going to keep this as dark as possible so that, like... Because, like, the characters could see things that I couldn't see. But, of course, he's down in the basement with the kids, and I'm just... Like, when the junkie falls in the basement, I could barely see those kids. Like, I could see the outline, but, like, except for, like, one or two shots, I was like, what's in the basement? I was like, oh, shit, it's bodies.
Yeah, I could not see it. I could not absolutely see it. So yeah.
And... So mine was also, quiet is not the word, but like when it needed to be loud, it was a little loud, but like everything was a little bit lower volume than what I'm used to in the movie theater. Like from the start, like the kid talking that intros mm-hmm. the movie, I was like, this is so soft.
Ours was right, but when it was loud, it was hurtfully loud. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like I couldn't hear them. It was just, you know, like I'm not used to soft talking. And yeah. Like, I was like, you need to turn the volume up like just two notches. So it could have been that the volume was a little low. But yeah, I was definitely curious about the dark thing more than anything because I was like.
Yeah, I was a dark movie.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes me, I like it as a choice. It would be upsetting if I, you know, if it was like, oh no, you just saw a bad screening. But yeah, like what a weird fucking movie. I do want to go back and watch Barbarian. Like that was one of those movies that everybody was talking about. Like,
yeah,
not just like you and Spencer and people I know, but like, it seemed like every film podcast I listen to, a fucking like every celebrity that they would ask about like their favorite movie from that year be like, oh, did you see Barbarian? Like, how crazy was that? And so yeah, like I want to go back. I am interested to see what this dude does next because like he certainly knows how to make a fucking movie.
He does. Like a movie, like not a, like, how can I put this? Like, it's really weird to me because it's like, there is this whole thing for me of like, they really like recently we've gotten a lot of people that know how to make cinema. They don't like, not like it's weird because there's this, I don't want to poo poo anybody or any genre, but like, I'm going to say that there's a difference between watching something that's a glorified television episode and something that's fucking cinema with a capital C, and I know that I keep on bringing him up, but he's I think it, slowly but surely he's becoming my boy, which is Joseph Kaczynski. Like, I just recently watched, like, just a side tangent, we're talking about Josh Brolin. I just recently watched Kaczynski's movie that he did with Josh Brolin, the first Miles Teller movie he did, which was Only the Brave, the fireman, the fire smoke jumper movie.
Yeah, I hadn't watched that. I heard it was good.
Holy shit, dude. Like, I got choked up. I was, like, I regretted the fact that I didn't get to see this movie in the theater because it's got big screen visuals. Because Kaczynski, that's what he does. Big screen visuals, right? This is a big screen movie. Like, I cannot explain why it's a big screen movie, but it is a bit, maybe it's the reactions that you have and you need to see this with a crowd because It's got that energy.
Like that. So the not only like the two people storming off at the end really made it. There was a lady sitting behind us. I heard her. I don't know, boyfriend. Maybe they're just on a date. I don't know. But the whole Julia Garner stuff at the beginning, like she was acting, like she was talking to the screen. Like she, like once it, because it gets creepier and creepier and creepier.
Yeah.
And like once you get to the part in the car where she's fucking drinking and staring at the house, and then it's raining and she's asleep and the door opens, the lady was just like, no, oh no. No, and I'm just like, I'm with you. Like, what the fuck is happening? And that the mom comes like that weird walk out with the scissors, and then you don't like you see her walk by the window and mm-hmm. then go around the car, and then you just hear the car door open and the scissors come in the frame. And like the whole time she was just noping this fucking movie. And cut to the last little bit, like when the kid breaks the stick and like she goes, oh no. And the old lady like takes off out of the house. Like she was fucking dying, man. Like it was us and her and like maybe two or three other people that were just laughing. It was so fucking funny.
And also like, I have to, okay. So I had to, I wanted to slow clap because that's one of my cinematic catnips is like in-house chases, like Raising Arizona, Point Break, like those running through houses.
It's fucking, so fucking well done. Like,
yes,
because that's one of those things where it's like, first of all, you're doing this with children.
Yes.
So everything has to be like, there's not really any such thing as like children who do stunt work. Cause that's, you can't do that.
No.
So everything has to be so well choreographed and so non-dangerous, but it looks so like funny, but also terrifying of like these kids are just like running through doors and windows. And I kind of want to see the behind the scenes of that, of him sitting down with those kids and be like, here's what we're going to do. And like, everything's breakaway, like just be careful and just go nuts. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, absolutely. Like it's so fucking good though. Like the way, and you're right. It's laughter inducing. Like it's funny. Like I was like sitting there and I kept on fucking giggling. And here's even the better part, which was that when the fate of the person happens the way that it does, like, it's one of the grosser things I've seen this year, but it is so hilarious. And yeah, her reaction to it is so great and so satisfying that you can't help but laugh. And I don't know, man, like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, they're like, it's a masterful study in tone that I was not expecting, because I was literally not expecting it to be as funny as it was, because yeah, it's funny as fuck. Like even the moment where, like even the way that the kids and that one character run, it's the meme, right? It's the,
yeah,
it's the Goku meme. Like, and I think that a lot of people like the other funnier part is that, did you notice all of like the weird, like subtle pop culture references? Like, did you see, like, and this is like going back to copyright, how copyright is free. And this is how you fucking do copyright. You don't make a fucking movie called Evil Slosher Popeye and fucking make a slasher movie about that. You allow, you put a character on a fucking t-shirt that you don't normally see in a fucking horror movie, right? Like,
yeah,
that's how you get away with it. Like, that fucking moment made me laugh for some reason so fucking hard when that particular character, I mean, the issue, like the scene is out, but the whole thing hasn't happened. Like the whole scene hasn't been shown, like, you know, on the internet. It's just that one scene where he's running after the particular character. But that whole scene is both terrifying and hilarious, but also it makes it funny is the character that he has on his shirt. It's like, oh man. And that's the kind of shit that we haven't been able to do.
You establish subtly that like, oh, this is this gay man and he and his husband are Disney adults. Like,
yes.
And like it's so just subtly shown, and it's wonderful. So, and also extremely creepy and scary. So, it's just a lot of good stuff in the movie. Like I said, I understand why you're just like, this is upper echelon. It just ultimately, like, I walked out with feeling a little unsatisfied by the ending, but it is a movie that like we can keep talking about because there's so much there. And even though I think it's 3.5 out of 5 or 3 out of 5 or whatever, like the fact that like it's something that I will continue to like think about and discuss, and like it'll come up, you know, next year sometime, like that it means more than like, you know, like I said, Fantastic Four, you know, not to harp on it, but like I'm not gonna be, other than like how it relates to the future of the MCU, it's not a movie I'm gonna like go back to and think about like what it's saying, you know?
Yeah, because it's not okay, like as much as that move, okay, so like again, like and you said like not to go harping on it, but it doesn't have that extra layer. Like at least Thunderbolts, we can talk about it from a mental health perspective. Like it has that extra layer.
And it's not that it's trying to say something, it's just that it like it's tackling like themes, like some kind of universal theme. And you can say Fantastic Four is like motherhood, but like it delves so little into that shit that it's like, yeah, but is it really?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. No. And you're right. Like, and it says it so kind of like plainly that it's nothing like that we haven't heard before. Whereas like something like Thunderbolts really does like have a unique entry point into mental health and that specific kind of mental health. And it also does something like the more I think about the Thunderbolts, the more I think of like, I just recently watched it on last Saturday night. Like I wanted something to just kind of, I didn't realize I would get heavily into it. I thought I was like, oh, let's just watch something like fun. And I forgot about the ending. But then when I watched the ending,
it's like, how do we solve this problem with hugs and forgiveness and support?
Yeah.
You know, oh, okay. Like it's something new. It's something different. It's, you know, even if it's not, you know, ultimately successful, Weapons for me, it's something new, it's something different. Like it will continue to be part of a conversation on like what cinema can do. Like, oh shit, we can still do stuff like this, and that's, you know, that's pretty great. So this is a movie that like I don't know when I'll watch it again, but I definitely would like to watch it again.
Yeah, like my big hope is that it gets released in a super packed edition, like a 4K edition that has commentaries behind the scenes.
I would love to see some behind the scenes stuff. I know bloopers have become kind of a thing of the past, but like, I want to see bloopers for this movie. Like, cause you know, like when you're dealing with this level of like, we have to be scary, like you're trying to be tense on screen and like shit's going to go sideways and everybody's just going to crack up. So I'm glad, even though we did not coordinate seeing this movie, I'm glad we both got to see it and talk about it. Cause yeah, it was pretty good stuff. So, next week I'm thinking, I mean, we're probably going to see Nobody too. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm definitely like, that's the one. Like I'm going to see, like I said, I'm going to over the, like on Sunday, we're seeing Freakier Friday. And then on sometime next week, I'm going to make it a point to see The Naked Gun. Cause Like, you're not the only person that has told me I really need to see this movie.
There was 7 minutes in the middle of Naked Gun that is some of the funniest shit I've seen in cinemas in I don't know how long, and I can't wait till you see it. So, until then, go check out. Oh, also Alien Earth next week.
Yes. So, yes. The first probably 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah. That's going to be a lot. So, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com and go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes. TheMovieAnal.com, where we've got a, like, we just finished, I just finished my run, from the, Fantasia Film Festival, which was very hard considering how much I was working, like, but that now it's back to the 4K stuff, and I've got a lot of stuff that's loaded up, ready to go. I just watched, have you seen the remake of Poseidon, the Poseidon Adventure?
No.
Like the one from the early 2000s? My god,
maybe. I don't think so.
Okay, so It is exactly what you expect from a Wolfgang Peterson film, which is it has amazing action, but terrible story. It is 98 minutes. I didn't realize it went from like the original is like a 2.5 hour movie starring Gene Hackman. It's super serious, almost too serious. It's funny. Shelley Winters has that moment that everybody talks about. This movie somehow manages to recreate the weird, super serious, but it's funny bullshit of the Poseidon Adventure, because they thought that they were making Titanic 2. And it's like literally I sat there and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This movie is like, I don't normally make fun of movies, but this movie was so fucking just, we're making a serious movie. And it's like, you're making fucking Poseidon. Like, you're making Poseidon Adventure. Like, it was a wild experience watching it. Like, about halfway through, I could not stop laughing because it was just like, When you make Kurt Russell overact and be over dramatic, and like literally have like his death scene, like I don't care, I'm ruining a 20 year old movie where he goes, oh no, literally underwater the same way that John Hurt does in fucking Spaceballs. I mean, like, how can you intentionally make that movie? But they intentionally did. It's $200 million flop that has gotten a 4K release, which is wild and fun to watch, like, this big budget movie belly flop with its story. I just reviewed that. And also, like, another movie that's really near and dear to my heart. Do you remember the movie Hiding Out starring John Cryer?
Yeah, I saw your review of that. I have not seen that movie since I was in maybe high school.
Yeah.
And God, I remember enjoying it because I used to be like John Cryer. I used to think was really underrated. I still think he's underrated. It was one of those like kid movies, like movies when I was a teenager that like, I don't know, video store movie, you know?
Yep. Or a cable movie, like an HBO movie that you'd watch like 30 times. That just got a beautiful 4K release. I'm shocked. Like, that was one of my favorite, there's a genre that doesn't exist anymore. And I'm really sad that it doesn't, but I'm also glad that it doesn't because we don't need the TikTok influencers taking over this stupidity. But the kid genre movie, where a kid, a teenager, or somebody in their 20s stars in a movie that normally would be populated by 30-year-olds, but they set it in high school. A movie that was playing at the New Beverly that I could not see that played on Friday and you told me about is a classic, like the classic apex of this, which is The Last Starfighter. And that just, all it made me do is want me to watch my 4K, and I'm going to have to do that. But that's like, that's Hiding Out, except for it's a mafia on the run movie, but it's set in high school. If you guys have not seen it, you got to see it. It's kind of great. But that I have that review. I have so many more 4K reviews that are coming down the pipeline. So we'll be back next week, though.
We will see you guys then.
And maybe some football talk.
Yeah, because football's back, baby.
It is so back.
comics. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that